is a real problem, and it's a consequence of the war on drugs, mass incarceration, racism, and all these things I fight against. A lot of them are minors who are then incarcerated with adults. These are guys who want to be better fathers, but one of the issues is the social construct that to be a real man, you've got to be a provider. And if you don't do that, your masculinity and manhood are called into question. This causes all kinds of psychological and emotional problems. I tell these young men that you may not have money right now, but you can be a man by the things you learn and then communicate to your kids. I feel they transmit a sense of calm and emotional maturity to their children as a result of their TM practice. I tell them it's a way you can assert yourself as a man in the family and bring real value and be an asset. TM also helps to remove the rancor that is often there between these young men and the mothers of their children. They become better parents and better neighbors. My goal is to make TM a fundamental part of our wellness platform, in the same way that nutrition, exercise, and education are. I also want TM in all of the schools across the district, as well as in after-school programs, community centers, and churches. I think Chicago's ready for it. It might sound strange to some people, but then so did jogging and eating organic. They're not fads now. My wife, Teresa, says she can tell when I'm meditating consistently. She likes that man when I'm doing it. We've been married 36 years, so this is a person who knows. Day 4. Growing the benefits. Here's the key point I make on the fourth day. You don't meditate for the sake of meditation. It's not an escape. You meditate for the sake of your life. As restful and rejuvenating, as centering and expansive as the experience may be, I always emphasize that what's really important is how you feel afterward. During this final class of the first 4 days, we look at the cumulative effects that follow your morning and afternoon practices. And while it's true that you cannot predict what any particular meditation session may be like because your body is different each time you meditate, it's also true that you have every right to assume that if you meditate regularly over time, there will be real, discernible improvements in your life. How long does it take for such improvements to show up? It differs for different people. I have taught veterans with post-traumatic stress who have not slept more than 1 or 2 hours a night for several months because of terrible nightmares and sweats, but after their first or second day of meditating, they went home and slept through the night. Weeks later, they reported that sleeping through the night has become a new normal. My own experiences when I first learned to meditate were far less dramatic. I mean, I was a stressed-out college kid, not a traumatized war veteran. But within a few weeks, my mind was much clearer, my memory much sharper, which was a boon for my studying, and I was sleeping much better at night. And my experiences have continued to deepen, and the benefits have continued to grow immeasurably over the nearly 50 years that I've continued to meditate. Studies investigating the effects of TM on cognitive functioning, heart disease, or depression typically last a minimum of 8 to 12 weeks. For example, the researchers want to see if a significant drop in high blood pressure or improved mood after 1 week of meditating is not a coincidence of that particular day, but rather a sign of a sustained trend over time. I always suggest this to my students. Resolve to meditate for 2 or 3 months as prescribed before evaluating if it's valuable. But give it that time. To explain the cumulative effects of twice daily meditation, Maharishi often used the analogy of how people in centuries past used to dye a white cloth yellow. First, you dip the cloth into a vat of bright yellow dye for a few minutes. Once the color is fully absorbed, you set the wet cloth out in the sun for many hours to dry. In the process, however, much of the bright yellow color naturally fades. Nonetheless, a hint of the bright yellow remains color fast. Again, you dip the cloth in the yellow dye for a few minutes and then let it dry in the sun for several hours. A bit more of the yellow is color fast in the cloth. You repeat over and over again every day and there comes a time when the dried cloth in the sun is the same yellow color as the dye in the vat. The analogy to the impact of meditation on the mind is simple. Settle down into the field of stillness for a few minutes during your morning meditation, and then plunge into dynamic activity. Get the kids off to school, head to work, study for an exam, whatever you ordinarily do. In those beginning days, you may notice that the equanimity and clarity of thinking you feel immediately after your meditation lasts for an hour or so before it dissipates. Now do that twice a day, every day for a week or two. A few minutes of meditation followed by many hours of your life. And see for yourself how the inner stillness grows and begins to extend longer and longer throughout your day. Then watch that happen as weeks turn into months and years of regular meditating twice a day. I want to emphasize that TM is not like blood pressure medication, where your level goes down after you take a pill and then climbs back up over time until you take the next one. That's obviously helpful and very necessary for people with hypertension, but it doesn't address the underlying issue of how people's bodies react to stress. It's masking or merely managing the problem. In contrast, the research shows that the benefits of TM are cumulative. Not only will your high blood pressure decrease, but a lot of other good, healthy effects will follow. You'll be more resilient, more efficient, and feel healthier and more energized over time. It's not positive thinking. It's not too good to be true. It's simply what happens when you're not tied up in huge knots of stress. Ray Dalio is the founder, co-chief investment officer, and co-chairman of Bridgewater Associates, a global leader in institutional portfolio management and the largest hedge fund in the world. Fortune magazine called Bridgewater the fifth most important private company in the United States. Ray is also the best-selling author of Principles, Life and Work. Ray has been practicing transcendental meditation for nearly 50 years and calls it the single most important reason for any success I've had in my life, because it has given me equanimity and creativity. Ray is now in his mid-60s, but he still has the same energy he had as a kid growing up in Queens, New York, with a jazz musician father and a homemaker mom. Meditation leads to open-mindedness and creativity, he told me. Meditation is a process of opening up. It's like taking a hot shower, but better. Even though you're not thinking of anything in particular, a great idea can come through, and then you just grab it. It also doesn't lessen your emotions. The emotions are the same, but you can step back and say, I'm not going to be controlled by that emotion. And I think it does help to see things at a higher level, Ray told me. I reflected on the practical significance of Ray's words to everyday life about not being controlled by emotions, when I was teaching a writer friend who has two boys ages 2 and 5. He had his first meditation session with me on a Sunday morning at my Midtown Manhattan office. That night, at bath time, my friend had trouble convincing his 5-year-old to get in the tub. But he stayed calm, and the child didn't get the hoped-for reaction from his father. I was feeling very present, he said, and then my son emptied a bucket of water on me. That would have been just the thing, he admitted, to make him lose his temper. But I had a real moment, completely soaked, where I saw my options. I could lose it, yell at him, and make him cry so he doesn't hear anything I say anyway, or I could acknowledge the absurdity of it and still be firm about the rules. How many times have I wasted opportunities to help him learn because I reacted purely out of frustration? This is the prefrontal cortex of the brain coming back online from daily meditation. It brings broader perspective and gives you a pause, a moment between the burning feeling of irritation and then lashing out, perhaps irrationally and regretfully. In the modern world, many people are like a car with an untuned engine. The idle is set way too high, and the car is burning way too much gas. In that analogy, TM retunes the nervous system, resetting the idle lower with a more balanced RPM and more energy to burn. Dr. Fred Travis is the director of the Center for Brain, Consciousness, and Cognition at Maharishi University of Management. Dr. Travis is one of the world's foremost research scientists on meditation and the brain. Even before he became a neuroscientist, Dr. Travis wrote his senior thesis at Cornell University on the effect of transcendental meditation on creativity. He took a matched group of Cornell undergraduates, some of whom were learning TM, and some who were not. "I would grade all the creativity tests, not knowing who were the meditators and who were not," Dr. Travis told me. "I would see huge transitions in some students, and I wondered, are these the meditators? They're really seeing things differently and being more creative in their responses." And when we broke the code, they did, in fact, turn out to be in the TM group. Later, Dr. Travis set out to study how TM could optimize performance and self-development. He used a composite index he developed called the Brain Integration Scale, or BIS. The BIS is a combination of three EEG-derived brain measures recorded during challenging tasks: broadband frontal coherence, alpha waves, and brain preparatory response. He combined these scores into the BIS, with higher scores relating to creativity, decision-making, and brain processing speed. When he measured the brain waves of 38 college students, Dr. Travis saw the BIS scores rose during 3 months of TM practice. Dr. Travis hypothesized that elite athletes and top business managers would have similar brain coherence, with the various parts of the brain connecting to work together. He tested the brainwave patterns of 33 world-class athletes, comparing them to patterns in 33 average-performing athletes, all matched by age and gender. He measured galvanic skin response and also gave them paper and pencil tests to measure self-development, moral development, and frequency of peak experiences during optimum performance. Sure enough, he found that higher psychophysiological growth, a greater sense of well-being during action, underlies higher performance. He also compared the brain waves of 20 top-level managers and 20 low-level managers, matched for age, gender, education, and type of organization. Top-level managers were characterized by higher brain integration scale scores, higher levels of moral reasoning, and more frequent optimum performance peak experiences. The evidence is clear. When the different areas of your brain are connected and functioning coherently, you get more done. But a prefrontal cortex is only as strong as the brain's circuits. The brain is a living organ that adapts to our every experience. The old theory was that the brain grew until the end of adolescence and then remained static, as is, for the rest of your life. Now we know that the brain has neuroplasticity. This is the ongoing strengthening and weakening of brain circuits throughout life. Each experience creates electrical activity that travels through the brain circuits. Trauma and stress generate dysfunctional circuits, while positive experiences produce functional circuits. With each new positive experience, we change brain connections in ways that will allow us to be better at what we do the next time. Research shows that the experience of inner stillness over time is a healthy, positive one, and it reshapes and strengthens brain connections. What exactly happens to the brain when you meditate? As I said before, researchers can track its effects by giving the TM practitioner an electroencephalogram, or EEG, which measures electrical activity in your brain. When you run an EEG on someone practicing TM, you see an increase in alpha-1 brain waves in the prefrontal cortex, and these brain waves then spread throughout the brain. Alpha-1 waves are the bridge between conscious thinking and our subconscious mind. Another unique characteristic is that these alpha-1 brainwaves are coherent. That is, the frequency of brainwaves from one point of the brain are similar to those from another point. This coherence is found between the prefrontal cortex and the back of the brain, and between the left and right hemispheres of the brain. Alpha-1 EEG coherence means that different parts of the brain are working together in full communication. What's important here is that this coherence extends far beyond the 20-minute meditation to enhance your brain function while you are focused on your work during the hours after meditation. According to a review of the effects of different methods, including open monitoring and focused attention, more than a dozen studies reported that TM is the only meditation technique to increase alpha-1 coherence. These coherence circuits are strengthened as you continue to meditate over days and weeks and months, allowing your brain to work more efficiently and effectively. TM does this in the same way that neural connections form during any repeated experience, such as musical training, for example, learning to play the guitar, also prime the brain for other aspects of human communication, like language, speech, and memory. But during TM, those connections are unique and have a more holistic impact on brain functioning compared with when you learn to play an instrument or listen to music. As a result, as you continue to meditate, you increasingly make better decisions with better judgment and planning. You're more yourself. Of course, none of this is magic. It's the way your brain works when all the different areas of the brain are connected, integrated, and healthy. Dr. Travis likens this TM benefit to an orchestra finally playing together in concert. And this is an ongoing process that starts from your first meditation and continues throughout your life. David Lynch is a close friend, a brilliant filmmaker. His credits include The Elephant Man, Blue Velvet, Mulholland Drive, Inland Empire, and many others. And he's the writer and director of the iconic television show Twin Peaks. He's also the founder of the nonprofit in his name, the David Lynch Foundation, which has brought TM to more than 600,000 inner-city school kids. David has been meditating since 1973, and he has not missed a single meditation in all that time. For him, the effects of meditating are like expanding the container of the mind. The conduit of that flow of ideas is more open, he told me, and you can just start desiring ideas and they seem to float in. As you meditate, you're able to access deeper levels of thought, down to the level of your intuition. David said, "It's the thing every artist is looking for, to get the thing that feels correct to us." I say intuition is our number one tool. Intuition is emotion and intellect swimming together. It's something that grows the more you transcend. And fortunately, regular meditation allows you to draw upon your creative resources on a regular basis. At first, though, David wasn't so sure. You hear about meditation and think, "You're going to get calm, super boring, and you're going to lose your edge," he said. I had that same fear. I thought maybe meditation would make everybody the same, and then they'll ring a bell, and we'll all be out marching somewhere. I was worried about those things. Instead, David found that TM gave him more of an edge to do his art, and freed him from what he calls the suffocating rubber clown suit of negativity. In David's view, anger, real, selfish, bitter anger, is nothing less than mind control. "That anger's controlling you," he said. "It doesn't serve anything. If you're super angry, that just occupies the mind, and there's very little room for ideas to flow in." Simply put, chronic stress and fatigue can make everyone look and act pretty much the same, and that means more reactive, unhappy, irritable, sick. On the other hand, meditation helps people actualize their own unique potential without being limited or shrouded by stress and fatigue, and that means being more creative, more productive, more fulfilled. I liken it to an orchard. If you have 10 different types of fruit trees, and they haven't been watered for a long time, you'll see a landscape of leafless, brittle brown branches and sticks and stems. But if you water and nourish the trees at their roots, you'll see a rich vista of differences. The apple, orange, and cherry trees will each be healthy, robust, and distinctly different, with each one yielding different fragrant flowers and sweet fruits. TM is like watering the roots of your life. It allows you to simultaneously nourish all the different parts of your life and to be more of who you naturally are. As this growth continues naturally over time, you will develop the expanded mental faculties that Maharishi and the ancient meditation texts call cosmic consciousness, and that Dr. Norman Rosenthal calls the supermind in his best-selling book by that title. As Dr. Rosenthal puts it, the supermind is a mental state that consists of the development of expanded states of consciousness that occur in tandem with reduced stress, better physical health, and the emergence of life-enhancing personal qualities. Dr. Rosenthal emphasizes that as you meditate over time, you don't just become more relaxed and smarter, but you also gain a scarce commodity these days. You actually feel happier. He surveyed more than 600 TM practitioners, a large majority of whom reported that, since starting to meditate, they felt as though they had become more mindful, recovered more quickly from unpleasant events, were more fully present and engaged, and were generally happier. They also reported that they felt more in the zone, which was associated with greater ease at getting things done and improved creativity and productivity. Unsurprisingly, Dr. Rosenthal said, these traits were associated with improved performance at work. Those who responded to Dr. Rosenthal's questionnaire also reported feeling luckier, as though they were receiving more support from those around them. They were making healthier choices in their lives. Others noticed their positive changes, and their relationships in general improved. The data also showed that favorable life changes that started after learning to meditate correlated significantly with both how long and how regularly people had been meditating. Finding the time to meditate was the foremost concern of Scott Miller when he walked into my Midtown Manhattan office a little more than 4 years ago. He had been thinking about learning to meditate for a long time, but the biggest challenge had been making time in his schedule for instruction. It's true, he was indeed very busy. Scott heads up G100 Network, an invitation-only membership organization that brings together current and rising CEOs from around the world to share ideas on leadership and strategy. Scott, who is CEO of both Hyatt Hotels Corporation and United Infrastructure Company, has trained and advised hundreds of CEOs and thousands of potential CEOs through G100. He told me he has learned that everyone is a leader in one way or another, but the demands placed on any leader, whether a corporate CEO, teacher, parent, or student, are escalating far beyond the available hours in the day. So having the clarity and scope to prioritize is becoming more and more essential. A big part of Scott's work nowadays is arming these leaders with tools to help them manage not just their professional lives, but their personal lives. We need to be taught to achieve balance. Once he learned TM, he knew the technique would be a major tool in that arsenal. Successful people, he said, want more from life than just high marks in their career. They want to be present and available to their loved ones and fulfilled outside of work. He urges his clients to meditate because he knows it will make them perform better at whatever it is they care about. If their focus is on business, they'll see advancement there. If it's about being a more active father or mother, they will have breakthroughs there. And he finds that when he encounters these leaders after they have been meditating for even a few weeks, the difference is remarkable. Every single one of them is more resilient, Scott told me. They can balance stresses at work and home so much better. One last point here to those who are concerned they won't be able to meditate twice a day every day. Well, life intrudes, and realistically, you're probably going to miss a session. But for your own sake, make that the exception, not the rule. Make it a priority. Of course, I think you should try to do it twice a day, because that's how you'll get the most benefit. Let's review the steps of instruction. Day 1. Here you learn to meditate with a certified TM teacher. Just you and your teacher. It takes about 90 minutes. Day 2. This is when you establish correct practice of the TM technique. So when you meditate, it's simple, natural, and effortless, with no concentration or control of the mind. This is a class with the people who learn to meditate in personal instruction the day before. This is also 90 minutes. Day 3. Here you'll understand the mechanics of how the unique state of restful alertness gained during TM practice allows the body to dissolve deeply rooted stress. This is a class with the same people from the day before, and it's also about 90 minutes. And finally, day 4, here you'll gain a vision of possibilities of how the benefits of regular TM practice to mind and body accumulate over time. This is a class with the same people from the previous 2 days, and it's also about 90 minutes. And what happens after you learn? Once you complete the 4 days of instruction, you'll have the option to schedule periodic refreshers with your TM teacher, or in fact with any TM teacher anywhere in the world, for the rest of your life. These sessions usually take about 30 minutes and are a simple and valuable way to ensure that you're meditating 100% correctly and gaining maximum benefit. And one last note. Life happens. There will be events in your life that you might need a little extra support to get through. As TM teachers, we are here for you. And even if you're on a sustained roll, it's nice to have check-in sessions to refresh your practice, to make sure you're on the right track. I just meditated with someone I taught in 1972. He was doing fine. He just wanted to say hello. Meditative moment. From gang member to a private college. When Maria entered New Village Girls Academy in Los Angeles as a 10th grader, she had very few high school credits and was perceived as having very little chance at succeeding in life. But she learned to meditate through a David Lynch Foundation program that offered TM to faculty and students at the all-girls charter school. In pretty dramatic fashion, Maria turned her life around. Right away, she said, she was able to focus better, retain more information, and stay away from drugs and gangs and other bad influences. She began taking college classes in her junior year, along with her required high school subjects. By the middle of her senior year, the young woman was ready to graduate with a 3.7 grade point average. Maria was admitted to several colleges with her pick of full-paying scholarships. Maria's story is so compelling that she was asked recently to testify before the City of Los Angeles Mayor's Office of Gang Reduction and Youth Development and the role that TM has played in overcoming the traumas of her life. Here is what she said. I grew up in a neighborhood that was known for gang violence. I was influenced by what I thought was cool, and I started fighting, drinking, using meth, and hanging out with a gang. I was 13 when I was first incarcerated in juvenile hall. 2 years later, I was incarcerated again, and then again. I kept getting out, going back home, and making the same wrong decisions. But the fourth time I went home, after I had been locked up for 6 months, I decided to make a change. I enrolled in New Village Girls Academy. The principal and teachers wanted to know about me, about my past and my journey. It was probably the first time someone actually cared about me. New Village is also where I learned transcendental meditation. Looking back, I see how it changed my life and how it has been essential to my recovery. I'm able to take 15 minutes to focus on myself and not worry about the problems at home, the homework that's due in 2 days, or that I have to see my parole officer tomorrow. Those 15 minutes make the rest of my day much better. I feel calmer and less worried. I focus better. I'm happier. Life still has not been particularly easy for me. The problems still occur. The stressors are still there. But now I have a technique that helps me to refocus and not lose sight of the big changes I want to make in myself and in my world. Pillar 3. Change begins within. What do you hope to get from learning to meditate? I often ask that question before I give an introductory talk about the technique. I hear responses like, I love my work, but it's incredibly stressful and I don't want to burn out. Or, I eat too much, probably because of stress, and I can't stop myself. Or, I become an anxious, fearful person and I don't recognize or like myself. Or, I want to relate to people better. Or even, my life is going well, I have no particular complaints, but I'm always interested in learning more, growing more, seeing if there's something more to life. Maybe one or more of those answers resonate with you. I remember meeting with Ellen DeGeneres in the living room of her home in Los Angeles. I was there to teach her TM, and I asked her the same question I just asked you. What do you hope to get from learning to meditate? Why now? Bob, she said, and then paused for a moment to think, I want to maintain a permanent connection with the intelligence that runs the universe. Whoa, I thought to myself. She waited for one beat. And I can't sleep at night. I chuckled along with her, but I often think about the truth in both things she said. Ellen encapsulated what so many of us want in our lives. Maybe you don't ask outright for the intelligence that runs the universe, but you want to grow. You want to learn more, do more, achieve more. It's only natural. You don't want to feel stagnant or stale in your work and relationships. And perhaps most importantly, you don't want to feel stifled within yourself. But the reality is that we are pulled so often in so many different directions, taking care of our kids, our partner, our work. It's easy to feel stuck, that we are at best spinning our wheels. We are working hard just to keep our head above water, to maintain the status quo, but we're not growing. What holds us back? Any number of things. Exhaustion, foggy brain, a shortage of good ideas, or maybe we don't know what to do, where to start. You can fill in the blanks there for yourself. The point is that meditating gives direct access to your own innermost, unbounded self. In so doing, it gives your body the deep rest it needs to eliminate the buildup of stress and tension that drains energy and undermines health. It makes available the clarity of thinking, the free flow of creative ideas, and the conviction of purpose to create changes in your life and in your world. I've been teaching people to meditate for a very long time, but I always appreciate seeing the unique way it affects different people. Case in point, when I had the opportunity to teach actor Michael J. Fox. It started when I got a call during halftime while I was attending a New York Knicks game at Madison Square Garden. It was Tracy Pollan, Michael's wife. She wanted to set up a time for Michael to learn to meditate. As we were hammering out dates, I discussed some of the benefits that the meditation could bring to Michael, who I knew had been battling Parkinson's disease since the early 1990s. At the end of the conversation, I asked Tracy offhandedly, "Is Michael looking forward to learning?" "Oh God, he doesn't know," she said with a laugh. "I haven't told him yet. It's a surprise." Michael must have liked the surprise because he came to our office several weeks later to learn. Before we began, he told me he had not taken any of his medications that day that helped control his tremors. He wanted to see objectively the degree to which meditating calmed him down. Michael on tremor-reducing meds is how you see him on television and in public spaces. Michael off meds is how almost no one sees him, save for his family and closest friends. In fact, after decades with Parkinson's, Michael's tremors had become more pronounced. I sat across from Michael in my office, both of us in comfortable chairs. I gave him his mantra and explained how to use it properly. He closed his eyes and began to meditate. Within seconds, literally seconds, all of his tremors ceased. I'm not talking about gradually subsided, but just stopped. Stunned by what I saw, I closed my eyes and meditated with him. A few minutes later, when we both were done meditating, I looked over at him and he was staring at his hands, which lay motionless on his lap. He sat like that for several more minutes, just looking at his hands. "This moment," he said, "is the calmest I have felt in years, decades." I wondered if Michael would have the same experience the next time he meditated at home. We met the following day, and sure enough, he said the same thing happened. A week later, he told me it was still happening when he meditated at home. Whenever he did TM, the tremors ceased. He said he had begun sleeping more soundly through the night, whereas before he would wake up every 1 or 2 hours. A month later, in another visit, Michael recalled how uncharacteristically relaxed he felt immediately prior to delivering an hour-long talk on Parkinson's before a large audience in Toronto. In the past, he confided, he would have sat backstage, fretting anxiously over every word he planned to say. This time he meditated for 20 minutes in the green room, walked out on stage, and gave one of the best talks of his life. Although Michael's tremors do inevitably return after he finishes his 20-minute meditation, for him, the big thing has been the significant reduction in anxiety levels and the dramatic overall improvement in the quality of his life. Since teaching Michael, I have spoken to many other TM teachers who have taught people with Parkinson's to meditate, and they report similar experiences. Why is this happening? It will be interesting to find out. Parkinson's is thought to be caused because the brain slowly stops producing the neurotransmitter, or brain chemical, dopamine. With less and less dopamine, a person has progressively less ability to regulate his or her movements, body, and emotions. Perhaps the meditation somehow affects dopamine production, calming this chronic, debilitating neurological disorder. It is the subject of a study the David Lynch Foundation is determined to support. You can also come at TM as a complete skeptic, like Dr. Richard Schneider, a retired Rear Admiral and President of Norwich University, but still be open to change. I liked President Schneider the moment he greeted me with a firm handshake in his office at Norwich University in 2010. Fit, good-natured, and affable, he is the longest-serving president of Norwich, the oldest private military college in the United States. President Schneider told me he'd heard about our work through Joan Andrews, the daughter of a beloved Norwich grad and trustee, the late Paul Andrews. "You've got to see what TM is doing for veterans," Joan said. "It's helping them." "Okay, back up. What's TM?" asked President Schneider. "Transcendental meditation." President Schneider admitted he laughed. Skeptical does not begin to describe how he felt. But he's a smart man, and Norwich has a reputation for being on the cutting edge. It was one of the first military colleges to admit women and African Americans, and it is also the birthplace of the ROTC. And it's not just about history. This small college in Northfield, Vermont, has worked to be ranked second in the study of cybersecurity, the next field of battle. I said, "Okay, let me find out about this," President Schneider recalled. "I have a very stressful campus, because that's what we do here. We stress them now so they get used to being stressed in the military." The more President Schneider learned about the tangible benefits of the meditation, the more interested he was. So he invited me and my colleague, Colonel Brian Reese, a medical doctor who served 5 tours of duty in Iraq and Afghanistan, to meet with him and his whole administrative team and talk about starting a pilot program teaching TM. "I support the idea of the program," President Schneider told me at the time, "but I have to learn myself before I can suggest it to any student. I have to lead from the front." President Schneider knew he could be taking a big risk in bringing meditation to a military college, professionally and reputationally, he told me. "I needed to learn so I could look people in the eye and say, 'I'm doing this. It works for me.'" On a cool, sunny afternoon in a private study room off the university's main library hall, I taught him how to meditate. Within a few days of learning, President Schneider found that his life was less stressful, even though none of the usual external stressors had disappeared. "I was more centered, and I was more relaxed," he said. "I stopped sweating the small stuff, and I think it's the small stuff that drives you crazy." He enjoys meditating on planes, he added, because he has the experience of all the noise just fading away. "Even," he said, "when some kid behind me is kicking the chair. I'm aware of it, but I'm perfectly relaxed." President Schneider saw the potential value for the Rooks, the incoming cadets. Cadets have been arriving at Norwich with more and more stress, he told me. Any of our counseling staff would tell you the same thing. And once you hear the kids' stories, it's no wonder they can't focus on their calculus. They have so much other baggage in the way. Just out of high school, many of these leaders in training are worried about their single parents and what is happening to their younger brothers and sisters in their neighborhoods. It's usually not about themselves, President Schneider explained. They're worried about others. President Schneider announced the TM pilot program in a letter to the inbound class and the youngsters' parents. We got overrun with parents who wanted their kids to try it, he said. We did a control group of a platoon of about 30 kids who got the training and 30 of the kids who didn't. Honestly, within 3 weeks, the kids who didn't get the training were complaining like they were disadvantaged, said President Schneider, because the meditating kids weren't getting yelled at, they were staying awake in class, they were performing better, so they wanted it. And I told them, you'll get it, but you're going to have to wait. In every measurable functional area, the TM team was outperforming the control team. Issues such as depression, anxiety, stress, bad moods, all went down significantly. Constructive thinking, emotional coping, and resilience all went up. I have an ethical responsibility to provide anything I can give these young people to be more successful and more victorious and take better care of their troops, President Schneider told me. He said he feels an added responsibility knowing that he is training future officers who will be charged not just with managing their own stress and adversity, but also of the people they lead. If the leader is stressed, everybody in the team knows it, he said. You want the team to be confident. Resilience in the midst of dire situations. That is certainly what's needed during a typical night in the emergency room at Chicago's Mount Sinai Hospital. One of four top-level trauma centers in Chicago, Sinai is also at the center of West Side gang turf. And right there in the middle of it is Dr. John Vasquez, Chief Medical Officer of Sinai Group and Chair of Anesthesiology. Summer is busier, he told me. We have a higher amount of trauma during the warmer summer months. Sinai is a level 1 trauma center, which is the highest severity, and a level 3 neonatal intensive care unit, which is also the highest severity. We see the sickest of the sick, and we can see very severe trauma, Dr. Vasquez said. The violence is certainly devastating for the families, but it's also traumatic for the first responders, the people in the ambulance, and the people who receive that person in the emergency and operating rooms. To help manage stress, Dr. Vasquez began practicing TM a couple of years back through a training grant offered to the hospital. I was particularly interested in Dr. Vasquez's experience because he not only handles the pressure of an OR, but also understands the boardroom. I've got a dual role here, he said. I'm an anesthesiologist by training, so that's clinical, but I'm also chief medical officer of the medical group, which has over 300 medical group physicians. That part of my job can be the business part. In addition to running a department, I oversee the business part of the medical group. I have a lot of demands on my time. Dr. Vasquez can see the effects of trauma from a personal standpoint and has a managerial sense of how it's affecting the staff. The week before we spoke, Dr. Vasquez spoke of a trauma case he took care of personally. It is incredibly sad to see people lose their life at such an early age and the loss of such great potential. It can cause burnout, he said, adding, I've seen physicians decide to leave the acute care hospital setting and choose to practice in a more outpatient basis just to reduce the stress level. Dr. Vasquez loves his work, loves serving his community. He says that meditating helps keep some of the stress of his job at bay. But I think some of the trauma stays with you, he admitted. There's no way you can experience what we see and have it not impact you. But meditating is a powerful tool that helps me manage the stress and prevent it from taking a toll. I can't highlight these stories of personal transformation and healing without telling you about Joey Lowenstein. I'd never taught a child who was on the autism spectrum until a few years ago. But I had heard from fellow TM teachers that kids and adults with autism benefit from meditating. Then Joey came into my life. His mom, Roberta Lowenstein, reached out to me after she'd been meditating for 2 years. She explained the severity of the condition of her son, then 15. He was nonverbal but communicated with a letter board. His IQ is off the charts genius level, but he can't sit still. Worse, he has terrible anxiety. That's the key to understanding his story. He has a disability, but the separate issue is his anxiety. "Will you teach him?" his mom asked. "Of course," I said. When we met to begin instruction, right away I saw that Joey had serious issues with attention. In fact, for the first week or so after he learned to meditate, he could keep his eyes closed only for a minute or two before he would jump up out of his chair. But Joey has a genuineness about him that people love, myself included. We stuck it out. Roberta either brought Joey by my office for follow-up visits, or else I met with Joey at their apartment so he was in a more familiar environment. Joey began to feel like family to me, and I wanted to see him succeed. And we got there. Within a month or so, Joey was meditating for 15 minutes twice a day and really enjoying the benefits. His mom said he was less anxious and displaying more self-confidence. She recalled the time Joey was stuck in an elevator in a New York City high-rise for almost an hour with only his caregiver and a bottle of water. TM is what got Joey through that frightening experience, Roberta told me. He started out calm and stayed that way. Yes, Joey has challenges, and he's keenly aware of them. But he's a normal teenage boy. He wants a girlfriend, he wants friends, and feeling socially awkward has left him with the impression that he doesn't measure up. That sounds like a lot of us, right? I remember asking him during one visit how his meditation was going. He wrote back on his letter board that he was really loving his practice. So I asked him why. "Because it's so easy," he wrote back. "I can do it." "Of course you can," I replied, "but what makes you love it?" "It's the only time during the day," he wrote, "that I don't feel bad about myself." It was tough to see those words spelled out so clearly. Since that conversation, Roberta and Joey have moved to Georgia, where he is enjoying a more supportive environment for his continued growth. Roberta said that Joey is starting to talk more and more and is growing in self-assurance. She credits his regular TM practice as a contributing factor, and Joey agrees. He also says that meditating keeps his mom in better spirits. "TM calms the mind and the mom," he wrote to me one afternoon on his letter board, after the three of us had meditated together. Obviously, TM brought tangible benefits to Joey's life. So can TM help teens who are not on the spectrum develop resilience and the ability to function well in stressful circumstances? Can it help the highly stressed out high achiever and the unmotivated underachiever? There is no doubt that it can, says Dr. William Stixrud, one of the leading clinical neuropsychologists in the country. Dr. Stixrud is also a member of the adjunct faculty of the Children's National Medical Center in Washington, D.C., and an assistant professor of psychiatry at the George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences. Additionally, he is the co-author of The Self-Driven Child, The Science and Sense of Giving Kids More Control Over Their Lives. I spoke with Dr. Stixrud because he's an expert in how parents and other adults can help young people sculpt brains that work effectively, what he calls stretching kids without breaking them. Although teens don't often ask their parents to find them a TM teacher, usually because they've never heard of the technique before, when they do meditate regularly, it benefits kids in the same ways that it does adults. Like adults, young people have a center, a core that is peaceful and happy, which they learn to access through TM, says Dr. Stixrud. And the more they do it, the more they find they are calmer and less reactive to stress. And when they do get stressed, it goes away faster, often twice as fast as it does in kids who don't meditate. Kids who meditate generally sleep better, are more able to keep things in perspective, and more generally find it easier to get through life with less wear and tear. This is true for kids handling the stress of growing up in extreme poverty, and it's also true for children from wealthy families who feel tremendous pressure at elite schools. Dr. Stixrud recently presented at a conference at which several professionals discussed data showing that TM is a powerful tool for preventing violence in disadvantaged youth. At one point in the conference, a woman who directs a high school program for high-performing students, many of whom are very stressed, told the audience that she had introduced TM into her school because, she said, "I couldn't stand to send one more depressed or self-harming kid to the hospital." Research has also shown that TM can give virtually any teen the power to think twice, or even once, before acting. It helps impulsive kids be more thoughtful, and it helps emotionally reactive kids to tone down their responses. As Dr. Stixrud says, TM allows their brain's prefrontal cortex to better modulate their amygdala, which gives them a greater sense of control. Dr. Stixrud likes to tell the story of a particularly hyperactive and impulsive young teenager he met during a TM study. The boy was, along with his fellow students at a school for kids with learning disabilities, 3 months into his practice of transcendental meditation, and Dr. Stixrud was doing a routine check-in to record results. "Are you feeling any effects from your meditation in your daily life?" he asked. The teenager paused for a minute, clearly giving the question some thought. "It used to be if I was walking through the halls and someone bumped into me, I'd just turn around and hit him." Dr. Stixrud nodded, ever the professional. "But now that I've been meditating, if somebody bumps into me while I'm walking in the halls, I stop and think, should I hit him or not?" Dr. Stixrud told me that after he stopped laughing, he had the following thought: "Getting impulsive kids to be less impulsive is really hard. This may be the best thing anyone's ever told me about transcendental meditation." That kid in the hall is like a lot of us, though for you and me, the question is less likely to be, should I hit him or not, but should I overreact and reply to this email and show everyone this guy's a fool? Meditating gives you the time and space to react and make wise decisions, not just in the moment, but also in figuring out big picture concerns such as, what do you really want from life? I find that many people are able to see the value of meditation in their own lives when they see what it has done for veterans. If the technique can work for these men and women who live with the most toxic levels of stress and anxiety, the thinking goes, then maybe it could work for me. So meet Melanie Pote. She was 18 months into her service in the U.S. Army when everything went wrong. Around 7 in the morning on March 20th, 2002, she was finishing her night watch of ammunition at Fort Drum in upstate New York. It was training week, and Melanie and other members of the 110th Military Intelligence Battalion were getting ready for a day of rifle practice on a nearby range. But first they had to line up for breakfast at the mess tent. "Because I guarded the ammo at night, I was usually first in line right at 7 o'clock," Melanie told me. "But for some reason, I kept stalling. The guy who relieved me said, 'Come on, it's been 15 minutes, get going.' So I did." At 7:20, Melanie was fifth in line when two artillery shells fell far short of their drill target and sent shrapnel ripping through the mess tent. The cannon shells, each with the power to rip apart a tank, were fired after members of another battalion acted in a negligent manner, according to Fort Drum's then-acting commander. "We saw the shells coming," Melanie recalled, "and then there was the explosion. The first person in line was killed instantly. That's where I usually was. And then another sergeant, whom I knew very well, was killed. He didn't die right away, he died later. But I watched him struggle as we tried to take care of him." Melanie was thrown through the air. "I didn't even realize I was hurt," she said. "I was trying to help everyone else. Then I saw two pieces of shrapnel in my left leg." Her wounds healed, but the trauma remained. "You just don't plan for that on your own base," she said. "You plan for it over there in Iraq." Melanie went home and things only got worse. From my experience with military PTSD, there's a lot of triggers. There are so many noises that happen, a car backfiring or fireworks, that will bring up a previous event. Worse, even the anticipation of being triggered caused Melanie to live in a clenched state of panic. I had tightness in my chest and pain there all the time, she said. After a decade of feeling untethered, Melanie, now a tattoo artist working out of Lawrenceville, Georgia, sought the expertise of a therapist who helped her work through her survivor's guilt. Still, she lived with that inescapable fear. For a long, long time, she said, I was very lost. Yet here she was now, a shy but funny young woman talking to me. What started the change? You're going to laugh, but I heard about meditation from an interview with the actor Matt Bomer, she told me. He said something like, everyone needs a reset button so you can start your day without anxiety. Curious, Melanie looked into TM in 2016 and decided to learn. Within 2 weeks of practice, I was driving my car down the road and I realized, wait, I don't have any tightness in my chest. I don't have any chest pain. I don't have that constant feeling of dread that I'm going to die. She pulled over and called her meditation teacher. I was laughing because it seemed so crazy. I'd lived with this anxiety for so long, and meditation was the missing piece to heal it. There are moments, of course, where Melanie's trauma returns, but the effects are not as severe, and it dissipates more quickly, she said. I can't stand fireworks, but that constant dread isn't there. It's been replaced with more of a calm. You can put Melanie's story in further context with this sobering fact. According to a recent study from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, 21 American military veterans commit suicide a day. That means while veterans make up only 9% of the population, they account for double, 18% of the number of U.S. suicides. The study includes more than 50 million veterans' records from 1979 to 2014 from every state. Most striking, roughly 65% of all veteran suicides in 2014 were for individuals 50 years or older, many of whom spent little or no time fighting in the most recent wars. A half a million U.S. troops deployed since 2001 have PTSD in return for their service. The RAND Center for Military Health Policy Research estimated that costs related to PTSD and depression could range from $4 billion to $6.2 billion over 2 years. The first study of TM as a treatment for post-traumatic stress involved combat veterans of the Vietnam War. The trial showed a 52% reduction in anxiety symptoms, a 46% drop in depression, and a 40% reduction in symptoms of post-traumatic stress after just 3 months' practice of the technique. Vets who couldn't sleep finally found relief, and many who'd turned to alcohol abuse were able to ease off their drinking. More recently, a study of vets from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan showed a 48% reduction in the symptoms of post-traumatic stress and an 87% improvement in depression. The results were evident after just 2 months of practicing TM. In 2010, the David Lynch Foundation began offering TM to veterans, active duty military personnel, and cadets, and their families, through our Operation Warrior Wellness Initiative. That's how Paul Downs learned to meditate. In his 11 years serving as an infantryman in the U.S. Marine Corps, Paul was deployed in hot spots and combat zones throughout the world. In the Middle East alone, he served in Iraq, Oman, Qatar, and Kuwait. When Paul left the Marines, one of the things he looked forward to most was being close to his young children. But what he didn't realize was just how much his identity as a Marine meant to him. When Paul left the Corps, he said he lost pretty much everything. His tribe, his sense of self, and all that he knew to be true. Because of that, he lost his sense of forward momentum, purpose, and connection. Paul suffered from PTSD. To outside observers, he told me, he might have seemed like just another angry, disgruntled vet. He sought help from the Veterans Administration, looking for guidance, direction, and connection. He said nothing helped. He quit trying. "I was drowning in fear and sadness," he reflected. "A few months after putting away the uniform,